Welcome everyone to the 5 o'clock wave. This is Adam Drummond and I'm joined by my regular cohorts, Matt Olson with a frown on his face and Jamie Way. How are you boys?
That'd be me. Very well, thank you.
I don't have a frown on my face.
You do have a frown on your face.
That's
you're
just
like,
your resting
that's
face.
Just, thinking, that's my
he,
face.
Is he telling me that I'm not projecting enough? Like, is it an audio issue?
My sister gets that. I just found out today that my sister listens to the podcast, so hello Bianca.
Are you deliberately being paranoid for Mental Health Week?
Don't come in. You have prematurely arrived.
Well, it could have taken 7 minutes.
We have a guest tonight. We're actually going to bring him in at the half hour mark, but now he's made his presence.
No. The microphone's just jewelry, is it?
Now, to build this up,
he's still making his way here, actually, because no one bothered to pick him up.
I've gone to the trouble of writing you a proper intro.
Yeah. I'll hear it and critique it as you do it.
And I don't know if you recognise his voice, but he's not just a singular. He is a multi-award winning comedian, broadcaster, actor and writer. He had a lead role in the Wagga film Backyard Ashes, which means that all four of us in this room have been in Backyard Ashes.
Correct.
As the hilarious Spock. And he's also known for his work on Skit House, Before the Game and guest appearances on Spicks and Specs. He's currently in town to perform his critically acclaimed one-man stage show. I think he's the one that critically acclaimed it. Soon to be a feature film of the same name, The Merger. And we're lucky enough to call him a mate, I hope. Joining us on the 5 o'clock wave is the multi-talented Damien Callinan.
Hooray!
Welcome, Damo.
How long did it take you to write that intro?
He's just straight off.
Copy-paste.
Straight off.
DamienCallinan.com.
straight off my own website.
Yeah.
Thank God I've just updated it.
Yeah, well.
I hadn't updated the bio for a while, and there's a couple of... It's really funny what people will still like keep in when they copy and paste, like that they haven't clearly haven't read it. Like,
come on.
In this year, 2011 alone, Damien has...
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't obvious.
You'll be seen in the upcoming television series, Skit House.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
But I copy and paste and then put different things that are at the bottom of the profile at the top and so that you wouldn't know.
Adam, we all appreciate the effort.
No, it was good. It was no mistakes.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Cool. You do the old school essay trick and just go in and right-click on the words and change them to synonyms.
This is essays that you've been able to do because back in my day... You couldn't right-click on anything. There's no computers.
Oh, yeah. You did them with a quill and ink.
You had to go in with a chisel pencil sharpener.
You did it in cuneiform on a clay tablet. Is that what you're telling me?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Mate, what do we say about long words?
You do. He's the longest. Mate, what are you doing in town? Tell us a little bit about why you're here.
Sounds more like an interrogation now.
No, come on. Where were you?
I didn't do it. She's
on the 6th of October.
I've just happened to have a collection of female underwear with me. It's not, I'm actually here at Barangaroo Writers Centre for 10 days and I'm working on the screenplay version of The Merger, the show that I'm doing at the Civic Friday night,
7:30.
It's in fairly advanced stages of, writing development. So we thought we'd, I'm in town.
Yep.
I'll do a concert.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Put on a show. And also, come on the 5 o'clock wave.
That's right. There's so many serendipitous things.
So many huge opportunities.
Yeah. Like, why not come to Chelsea Uni at the time when the Magpies are at their most violent?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And did you get swooped today when you were out in the field?
They've been eyeing me off.
Yeah.
There's one, we've got it. I've been running, jogging backwards a bit when I get to his tree.
Yeah.
And he just does that thing of, I might just go to that tree. Yeah.
Keep an eye. Because if you make eye contact with them, they tend to stay away, don't they?
Yeah.
That's the idea with the with the helmets that have got eyes on the back of them.
Yeah.
Or isn't the thing to wear your sunglasses backwards on your head?
Yeah.
It's Cousin It
or
style.
Draw a face on the back of your bike helmet.
Yeah. Or if you've got a bald head, just draw a face on the back of that.
Or Daleks are fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Generally.
Yep.
I've always been partial to the sticking the sort of
cable
ties.
Oh, the cable ties out of the helmet.
Yeah. Again, I thought you were telling us to raise our levels.
No.
You know what I find works the best for avoiding magpie strike is just not going outside.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
They don't swoop you in your lounge.
You're a bit of an expert in. You're a bit of an expert in going outside.
Did you want to see the clip online today? I think it was. It was down in Shoalhaven in New South Wales. A guy had a GoPro on the back of his bike helmet.
No.
And it's amazing footage. And he slowed it right down and put it with kind of classical music. And when the magpie comes the first time, and it's a beautiful footage, comes right up, and he's got a worm in its mouth. He's got, it was actually like mid-snack and went, fuck, I hate bikes.
And they do, they go for cyclists because, first.
Yeah, 83% of attacks of cyclists.
Wow. Where did you get that statistic from?
From that same article. Yeah. I am a little bit, I've always been a bit fixated by magpie season because it dates back to when I was at primary school. They were pretty bad in my area and I had to run the gauntlet in magpie season past this row of gum trees, and it was like a railway drop escarpment on one side or a really busy road on the other. You had nowhere to kind of escape.
Plank.
And we had in peak season, we had like points that we would run to and all gather. We'd always gather under the under the eaves of the Greensboro vet. And then they'd make a bolt for it. And my mate Pete O'Connor lived across the road, so he just piss-bolted across the road. One night we were still waiting under the vet thing, and he piss-bolted across the road, and it got him. Just opened him up too. I got opened up once in the temple.
Oh no!
But then they got bad at our school as well. And one day they all of a sudden decided to have a staff versus students netball match.
Up on the top court. They do that in prison.
Yeah.
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 And so the whole school went up to watch this staff versus students netball time, and we're right in the far top corner of the school. And while we're up there, we heard gunshots. And they'd got someone in to kill all the magpies.
Bang
while
them
we
were out.
Shooting. Wow. Yeah, just shot them
the
out of the sky.
The cull had begun.
So it's always been in my head, like, don't mess with them. But...
Nope.
And do you do that? Do you, when you're going running or you're on your bike, do you take a stick with you? Would you use it?
No.
When I go running,
yeah.
Why are you looking
at
Jamie?
Let's go back to the inside outside thing.
Yeah, exactly. Not really the question.
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, yeah. So that if you feel or you hear the swooping or you're looking,
but they're very fast. I mean, you'd have to be a bloody good shot.
Yeah, you would.
Oh, they come up and down like they.
I've got a better question for Jamie.
Yes.
When you're playing GTA 5 and a magpie swoops your character,
no magpie,
which weapon do you normally select to rid yourself of that
Well,
pest?
You'd want to be playing as Michael because he has the time slow ability. You double-click the sticks and time slows down so you can take the perfect shot.
Yeah. I suggest a three-wood. I lived in country Queensland for a while, and the golf course that we played at was notorious as well. I feel like I've lived in my whole life in the shadow of the fear of magpie swoops. But there was some really attacky one that we had to encounter for about three holes. Like, we'd go down and then come back to his area, and someone would be trying to play their shot, and the others would just be swinging three woods
Bloody
or
hell.
Whatever they could find just above their head just to keep it away.
Protecting them.
And it would still
get,
just kept coming.
Yeah. Mm. They've got little personalities like that. They latch onto you.
Aggro.
They do.
Yeah. Have you seen the footage? What made me think of it when you said the GoPro and the Maggie? There's footage of a guy who's riding like a scooter in one of the Greek Isles, and he's got a pet parrot that's flying along beside him, and he's doing about like 60 or 70 k's an hour, and the parrot's keeping up. It's like it's hovering in the air right next to the motorbike. It's unbelievable, and it stays there for about 5 or 10 minutes. He does like a lap of the whole island, and it's just right there, like it just in arm's reach. Yeah.
Is it on a string?
Very cool.
Is it on a string or something?
No, it's a real flies in at the start of the clip and keeps level with him,
like,
you know, within arm's reach, just off his shoulder, and then flies away at the end of it. Like he's obviously got a camera strapped to his helmet because he's sort of watching it and like flicking back, obviously looking at oncoming traffic as well.
When you reckon the parrot's going to go, hang on, he drives a Vespa. He's not a pirate.
I've been lied to.
Away, yeah.
Is the stand-up equivalent of a magpie the heckler? Is that like those lone people who get drunk?
Yeah, drunk heckler.
Yeah, drunk heckler.
A drunk heckler doesn't know, and they just keep coming back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how well you put them down and how much the audience is either enjoying it or also hating them.
Yep.
They'll just keep pecking.
I'm fascinated by hecklers. Like,
yeah.
What goes through their mind to make them, you know, say something out loud in front of a room full of people and make it all about them. Have you ever come across one where you've gone, I'm just not going to engage with that one because it could get...
You're always doing that because some people... You can hear some people start up. It's like hearing a lawnmower start up three blocks away.
Yeah.
And you go, okay.
Here it comes.
No one's paying attention to it yet. And eight or nine times out of ten, they'll stop because they've got nothing from the people around them the first or second time. So you're always like, because as soon as you go there, you're there, yep, and you have to deal with it.
Yep.
And not that I fear it, it's just
annoying, like a magpie.
Yeah. Yeah. And most of the time, in Australia anyway, it's very rare that you get an aggressive heckler. They're usually what I call helpless. They think they're helping and they're just talking out loud.
Yeah.
They think that any gap is theirs. Is theirs, which is unfortunate. I have a certain, I leave a lot of space in my comedy. Like, I'm comfortable to.
It's like jazz.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And sometimes there are deliberate pauses that actually make the joke
awkwardly long.
And there's nights where you go, you have to shorten the gaps because they'll just walk in them. It doesn't matter how well you're going. They just think, oh, silence. I have to talk. Ah.
Yeah.
me. What? Oh, the silence is killing me.
We went recently to the Civic Theatre, which is where you're doing the merger, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the Civic Theatre, to Paul Hogan, who was doing his round trip through country and regional Australia. And he got a heckler. It was just, I don't think he could hear what this bloke was saying. And I don't particularly think he may have been a heckler. I think he might have just been trying to communicate with him.
Yeah.
And Hogue's way of...
Isn't that what a heckler is, though?
Well, no, but it might have been giving him a compliment rather than, you know, he was trying to add
to the
crocodile
Dundee, mate. Yeah. It's kind of all the same.
It is. Yeah. He just heard it, and he's on a spiel, and he doesn't want to get off the spiel because he's locked into the memory, and that's it, or the earpiece. It was hard to tell whether he was being fed or not. But this guy said, all he said is, oh, shut up, dickhead.
Yeah.
And that's there's this awkward silence. But what he did was he made sure no one else was going to do it because that's how he was reacting to it.
Yeah.
So it was a nice way to just end it, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there are finite, quick ways of doing it. But you got to make sure you just don't. I mean, I don't believe in going hard. There's no point in making people feel.
You don't get your stick out and start waving it at them.
It depends on what they've done. Yeah. You know, like, you know, and there's kind of artful ways of taking them down as well. I remember once, and the thing is, because I do stand-up and I also do character.
Yeah.
And my shows, like The Merger, is all character. I'm not in it. But so it depends on which character's on stage. And because it's very interactive too, like it kind of floats between this world of theatre and stand-up. It's not stand-up, but I am communicating to the audience and making them believe that they are the players at a halftime address or they are the people at the extraordinary meeting that's going to stay the execution of the club and interact with them. So therefore, you do invite the opportunity for people to take it in the right direction. But, you know, I have control. But there are times, I remember once, and there's a little boy character in it who is the narrator, essentially. He's making a documentary about the club. And I was doing it. It was at the Adelaide Fringe, and the show was going really well. There was no issues. But this young couple came down. It was a bit of a weird venue. It was upstairs at Belgian Beer Cafe, so it wasn't really set up for it. And there was kind of couches, and they just sat at this couch, and then they just started talking to each other, like kind of on a date.
That's
but they
rude.
Were right there, and then they both got on their phones.
Oh, rude!
And then kind of talked a little bit more, and it was that point where you could just see the people around, all their heads just kind of like just turning and looking, but I'm in the little boy character, and it kept going. And then the phone rang.
Oh God!
And already there's a character in the show who is a belligerent, alpha male.
Yeah.
And he'd already been introduced, and then they realised who he was, and now I'm being this kind of diminutive, kind of low status little boy. Mm. And then I just turned to them and I said, you're lucky my granddad's not on stage because he'd rip your fucking ass out. And I knew that in 10 seconds' time I was going to turn into him.
Yes.
I was about to turn. So I just kept going with his dialogue and the dialogue went me jumping off a stepladder and turning into Bull and just roaring at the crowd, just going, right, we're not here to fuck spiders. And I just turned on this couple, just...
They were sitting.
Just, and they were like, the whole crowd were just aching with laughter. And I went, you know.
You asked for it.
You asked for it. I've kept it in the story, though.
Yeah.
Like, I've made it kind of artful, but you'll never talk again.
That's
in the show.
Yeah.
They stayed, and to their credit, they did, you know, because sometimes people, if you go too hard, it's like you shut all their exit doors on them, and then they've either then got to have a crack back at you or leave.
Yeah. They're the options.
And leave is bad because the whole crowd just go,
sometimes,
unless they've been really bad, like there's a sense of relief. I remember being in a gig in Adelaide, and this was one of those times where there was like a genuine hateful heckler. This bloke had won free tickets on a radio station for his 40th birthday. He'd come in from Salisbury. And he was sitting in the gallery too, so you couldn't you couldn't see him. And he went everyone. And he went me the least. Like, he talked kind of through me a bit.
Yeah.
But he was a big fella, and he'd got really aggressive, and security had gone to speak to him, and the security had, he'd said, literally, security, "I'm not fucking moving me. I'm not moving. If you try, I'll kill you." And didn't move. Didn't move. And so I kind of got through my set. And then Gary Eck was headlining. And and Gary came on. And straight away, he just decided to go. And so Gary engaged him. And the guy just started going him. And the whole room were behind all of us, like 100%. And in the end, Gary just kind of went, "Well, dude, you know, you got to just go, you know." Don't fucking tell me to go. I want to go anyway. I'm just going to go. And then he had to walk all the way down the stairs and then down. And then we thought, oh, shit. And I actually moved forward towards the front because I thought he's gonna hit him.
Punch someone.
So I kind of moved down towards the front just for solidarity with Gary. And then he got to about 5 minutes from the stage, and he was a big unit, tats, minimal teeth, and he just kind of spat on the floor near the stage.
Oh, no.
Called everyone whatever he wanted to and then walked out. He walked past me, and he didn't look at me.
Yeah.
And as he walked past and the door opened, I've never felt relief like it. The audience were standing up and hugging each other. It was like the end of a siege.
They had,
I ended up hugging these. There was a couple on their second honeymoon in Adelaide from Melbourne, and the three of us ended up in an embrace.
They had stared death in the face. The best thing happened because
he hadn't seen this, but his wife was about 10 metres behind him. And so I've come out of this embrace, and she just looked at me. She went, "Fuck you." and she flicked her cigarette in my face.
Yeah.
So she was smoking inside for a start. She went, just hit me in the forehead and bounced off.
Oh, what a match.
That's the only time I've ever seen anything quite like that.
Amazing.
But a romantic night out for the two of them, and it turned into that.
Tickets. You've got to wonder what's going through the minds. Like, firstly, what did he expect the show to be like? And secondly, how did it differ so greatly from what he expected that he was that angry or that, you know? Like,
I don't know.
He wanted to punch up. Because
it wasn't, he wanted to punch up. It wasn't really about, I don't think he was listening to anyone.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is? The show got in the way of the punch up that he wanted on the street.
Right. Yeah,
a little bit.
And he's brought it into the show. He's going to get
And
it
he was still there
another.
About 20 minutes later until the cops came. Yeah. Like, security were having to keep him out. He wanted to come back in. And
that's just his little cycle.
Yeah.
That's his Saturday night.
Yeah, the night's not finished until the boys in blue show up.
Yeah.
There's I just heard Russell Peters talking about a similar type situation on a podcast a few weeks ago, and he's been a boxer.
Yeah.
Russell Peters, for those people out there, is a huge, big famous comedian from Canada, I think.
Yeah.
And he's like famous everywhere except here in America. He plays
here
like
in America.
Here and America.
Right. I was very confused by your geographic there.
Like, he's massive everywhere. He's breaking into America now, but he plays these huge gigs. Like, he played Madison Square Garden, and like, he's a big deal. But he's a big unit as well. Like, he used to box, and it was his physical thing, and he was telling a similar story. Like, there were a couple of guys just giving him shit from the audience. There was one little guy and one big guy, and then he walks out of the gig afterwards, and he's coming out of the hallway at the front of this club, and the big guy's there, and he's thinking, oh, Christ, you know, it's on now. So he started it, basically. He put, like, three into the guy's body and then sort of clocked him in the head.
Oh, no.
Just put the guy down on the floor.
No, no one expects
and said,
to
so
cure a fight.
What's happening now? And the guy's like, it wasn't me, it was my friend, he's outside.
Oh, no.
Got the wrong guy. Hey, I just thought, having Damien on the show, that we would do something a little bit different and find out who out of the three of you, because I know all the answers, are the most educated.
Not me.
There's me.
Specifically on the performing arts. I have got...
Okay.
You should be right, because most performing arts, not all, happens inside.
Yeah, that is true.
So you should be
okay. I could have an edge here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apart from the Wollundry Amphitheatre.
Yeah.
Apart from that. Okay, you ready? There's five questions because Matt likes to keep things to fives or fours by accident.
Yeah.
The first question is, and this is all performing arts. It's not just acting. Yeah. The skill of acrobatics has been entertaining audiences for centuries.
True. Well,
yes.
In the art of which ancient culture have acrobats been portrayed?
China.
Perform, not even one of the answers. It's multiple choice two, by the way.
I would say China.
I should have said that at the start.
Wait for the end of the question.
Ancient culture have acrobats been portrayed performing their skills on the back of bulls?
Greece.
A.
Greek.
It's multiple choice. Wait to get a few options.
Yeah, we know the rules now.
You know what? Greece isn't one of the options either, smart Alec.
We should let Matt have a go on his own.
It says here, Australian Aboriginal. A. B is Russian. C is Minoan. That's how you pronounce it. It's the first time I've ever.
How do you spell it?
M-I-N-O-A-N.
Minoan, yeah.
Minoan. And Native American. It's one of those four.
I'm pretty sure that Minoan. I'm going to go Minoan. Like ancient Greece, like a sort of Cyprus.
I'm going
to
say Minoan.
I think Minoa is like.
That's mine.
Greece.
My vote. Yeah. Minoan.
All right. Damo.
I think we should all go Minoan.
Yeah.
Why not? Everyone keeps on equal scores. Okay, it's correct.
Yeah.
Pricks.
So you know the root of that Minoa, so it's not manure.
No.
Minotaur. The Minotaur, which was the bull.
Yeah, Minotaur, yeah. Right, of course. Yeah.
Well known.
So there you go.
Well known for Diablo.
Yes.
Minotaur.
Yeah. Nice. What, the computer game Diablo? Wait, I'm lost.
Yeah.
No. Next question.
Next two. Okay.
But are they all multiple choice?
Don't overthink it.
They're all multiple choice. Number two. Sorry. Buskers were referred to by this term from approximately 1860 in European countries, but up until this time, however, which term were these street performers usually known? A. Live wires. B. Spontanes. C. Pests. D. Minstrels.
B.
Wow.
B. Spontanes.
You reckon?
Mm.
Minstrel was sort of a wanderer, like a bard. Weren't they?
I'm going to say pests. That's my vote.
Spontanes as well. That sounds pretty clever.
Well,
I don't know about live.
When I was filling this out online, I went with spontanes as well, and it was wrong. It was minstrels.
Really?
There you go.
So none of us got it.
So you're all on 1 point.
No, I said pest.
Ah, okay. Pest, yeah.
You're all on 1 point. Juggling's been around for several thousand years, did you know? During the decline of the Roman Empire, however, this art was banned.
Oh, thank God.
Why was this?
Who banned it? Sorry.
The Romans.
Right.
The Roman
during
Empire.
During the decline of the Romans.
Yeah.
Maybe Nero.
There's four reasons. A, jugglers were accused of poisoning generals. Mm. B, jugglers were thought to carry the plague. C, jugglers were accused of being bigamists. Or D, jugglers were accused of practicing witchcraft.
Oh,
could be any of poisoning the generals. Romans,
could be any of them.
I like the poisoning one.
Yeah.
Sleight of hand, you know?
Yeah. But the Romans weren't so superstitious.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe they were.
Does a lot come down to what they were juggling as well? Like, you just think it's balls, but it could have been.
I do think it's balls. In fact, I always default to balls.
I'm going to go with the plague because they generally nearly always have an infected tattoo.
Yeah. That's good.
I reckon that's carried down through the.
Okay.
That's carried down through the genes.
I'll balance it out. What did you say, Jamie?
I said,
poisoning
the
generals. Look, I'll go with the bigoted.
How
could all three of them be wrong? But it is.
Really?
Witchcraft.
Witchcraft.
Still 1 point each.
Wow. Okay.
So, here's
one. Now, Damien, this is specifically for you. Acting, the art of portraying a story by trained thespians to an audience, dates back to which era in history? I probably don't even have to read out the multiple choice here, do I?
What era?
A, ancient Germany. B, early Polynesia. C, ancient Greece. D, ancient Britain.
Well, C.
Greece, yeah.
Polynesia?
Polynesia? The Minoans.
Minoan.
2 points. These guys have got it. I'm sorry, Matt. And you know what? Television production lecture, it's not like the acting.
No, I was just throwing that in.
Yeah,
there.
He's
so
just throwing it in.
I was throwing it in there so that
Euripides
there would so that there would actually be someone who was leading.
Yeah. So we get back on even.
However,
keel.
Here's your chance for a comeback.
Is this the last question too?
Thank God it is. Which country?
And I'm enjoying this far more than I thought I would.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, we should have had the Uber quiz from the Saturday Advertiser. Oh, we could have just gone through that.
God, exactly. I'm getting sick of my own
Here
voice.
We go. See if I can tie
Five
it up here.
And last. Which country gave birth to the art of ballet? A, Italy. B, Sweden. C, Greece. Or D, Siberia.
What?
A little bit of think music.
I'm thinking Siberia.
We're going to go through them again.
Okay, so
I'll do the music
Italy.
While you do it.
Thank you. Italy, Sweden, Greece, or Siberia?
I'm going to say Siberia.
Siberia?
Which may be the obvious one, but I'm going to say that.
Oh, is it obvious?
Yeah,
I'm saying
say
Italy.
Siberia as well.
Siberia?
Italy.
Italy. Damien Callinan, our guest, has won tonight.
Whoa, yes, he has.
With the answer is being Italy, I put Siberia too, just out of interest. And to knock you down, when you're doing this online, it actually tells you what percentage of people answered correctly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like up around the 86% mark for some of the ones that we got wrong. Yeah. This makes you feel shit.
Oh. Mate, I think you're right, Matt. I think we're
I only got one right.
Trivia's not supposed to hurt.
And yet it does. And yet it does.
Now,
it fucking
funny
does.
That you say that, Damien. Speaking of hurt... What a segue for our wave advice. Did you guys notice that all of my segments tonight started with W?
Nope.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Two of which I started
Still
with
Still haven't
the
noticed.
Wave.
I mean, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Just to make it. Damien, we're going to get you
really,
to read this
really
out.
Wonderful.
This came in to us on a direct message on Facebook. So I've got it here if you want to read it.
I'm just getting my glasses out.
Oh, sorry. Honey. I thought you were getting your iPad out.
He's got a prop. Well, which is a perfect thing for radio or for an audio thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, the glass is coming out so he can read.
I was told when I came to Brent,
here we go.
I needed to have glasses to look like a writer.
I can't believe how hot you look with those glasses on.
You look like
it is a bit hot in here. I'll put the air conditioning on.
No,
you look
seriously.
Like sexy me.
Tell you what's weird is wanking and reading glasses.
What?
Why? Why is that weird?
Is it because of what it looks like?
Yeah, well, just like, you know, I put these on, but to do that. What, anyway. This is the just something I've been thinking about.
This is the most erudite tug I've ever had.
I read a lot of erotic poetry.
Yes, well, don't we all?
Yeah. E. Cummings. It's the only thing that gets me through the day.
Shelley on a good night, tell you what.
Photo of you two side by side now that you both got specs.
All right,
on.
So I'll read this. I did read it earlier, so I'm aware of its the intent and seriousness of it. Dear Waivers, I work within an organisation with over 20 staff and have been there for 5 years. I am a bubbly, outgoing person who loves to engage in chat around the office and ask people what they did on the weekend and what they've got coming up for plans, which I always took for granted as just being friendly and nice. Last week, I walked down the hallway and heard three of my colleagues saying how annoying I am, and at one stage, the new girl said I was fake. I was in two minds to confront them about it, but in the end, I realised I was actually too upset to show myself and instead just went back to my office and pretended I didn't hear them at all. What should I do to get over these horrible feelings I'm now having about myself and who I am? Thanks for the advice.
What should you do to get over these feelings? Pop on a pair of reading glasses and have a vigorous wank.
Oh, nice tie back in. First of all, I think this happens in the workplace fairly often, and you may just not hear about it. You know, people talking about colleagues and things in a negative way, and obviously whoever these people are, they've done it in an office, and she's walked past, and she just happens to be... That's bad luck. She's heard it.
Mm.
But I think it's fairly common.
So what you're saying is that most people get talked poorly of in a workplace.
Well, you were running late. You should have heard what I was saying about you.
Scandalous.
It was terrible.
You know what stood out for me in this thing was at one stage, the new girl said I was fake. That new girl's a bit big for a fucking boots, don't you think?
Yeah, the new girl. It's pretty loaded. The new girl.
The new girl. She's been there a week and she's already talking shit about our friend here.
I don't know. Look, it's bad. Yeah, look, I don't know. It's bad hearing that about yourself, but I suppose you just got to evaluate those people. And did she think they were friends anyway? Or, you know.
It sounds like she thinks everyone's a friend.
Yeah, because it's poisoned, a relationship. And she's either got to confront them, or I reckon the alternative is to just start doing things that they can talk about. Just every day turn up to work with a dead bird. Different kind of dead bird every day and just go, oh, I found a dead bird.
Henna tattoos on the face.
And then put it in the work, in a kitchen bin and don't talk about it again.
Put it in the pigeonhole. Oh.
Find the boss's coffee mug and just squat and urinate into it in the middle of the tea room.
That's probably stage four.
Yeah. You need to escalate to that.
Probably, in fact, dead bird's probably stage two. I'll probably go in.
I was going to go the opposite way with the passive-aggressive angle, and with those particular people that we're talking about, she's extra nice to them with chocolates and flowers and stuff, but everyone else is just treated normally, and they kind of go, why is she being so nice to us? And then it dawns on them. Mm. I wonder if she heard.
Mm. No, they won't. They won't think about that, though.
No. No. They're far too
I think any plan like that is fraught with making the situation worse.
Yeah, of course
it is. She is probably better off if she does want to have a relationship with them. I'm assuming this person listens, so I'm not going to keep talking about dead birds. In case she does that. Actually, I think dead birds probably a good idea. Have fun with it.
Put it in a pigeonhole.
Or just ask them too much. Just ask too much about their weekend.
I'd like to throw out an alternative approach for, is it S? Yes, S.
We'll assume it's
S. And
Sarah.
That is to maybe take a scientific approach. Let's have a look at the evidence here. And the first question I think S needs to ask of herself is, are you annoying? And are you fake?
Well,
because that could be the root of the problem. If you are annoying and you are fake, maybe you need to put the lens back on yourself and sort that out first.
But I'm fascinated by this because how do you know if you're the person being accused of being fake, whether you're
fake or not?
Like if you're genuinely
it's
being
Turing
up,
test,
happy
I think.
And
yeah, it is.
Cheery.
It's very much that. Yeah,
yeah.
What is it?
The Turing test. You know, how do you
know whether you're a computer
or a robot
human?
Or yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Sorry, I was attempting to sort of make a lame.
Yeah.
You're attempting to bring some of the geeks back into the conversation.
But you know, there's people that do small talk with you, and you may not necessarily be a person who engages in small talk. Does that make the small talk a fake? I don't necessarily.
Yeah, there's rules that we play, and the rules are a little bit different in a workplace too, because you do spend a disproportionate amount of time with them.
Yeah.
And there's a finite number of things that you can talk about.
Mm. Yep.
It's inevitable that pettiness kind of creeps in.
Yeah.
It's like the Big Brother house, a workplace, you know.
Yeah,
it magnifies little things. It amplifies small problems into big problems.
One of the favourite sketches I ever did on Skid House was with Peter Hellyer.
Yeah.
And it was just two workers kind of just crossing through the kitchen. One was on the way to the toilet and the other was just on the way back. And they kind of stop and just go, oh, can I? how's your wife? She's right. You still with Kate? Yep. We've got nothing in common, have we? No, I was going to the toilet. Oh, no, we just separate.
Awkward work moments. But you can check these out too, by the way, on YouTube. Damien's got a lot of stuff
that one's
like
up
that.
There.
That
one's
on
up
there.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. And the other one, was it you playing, this is my favourite, and again, I think it had Pete Hellyer in it, where you played Batman?
Yep.
And you...
There's a whole series of Batman sketches.
Oh, yeah. Right. And you, in this particular one, you locked your keys out or something, or you couldn't get in your car, and it's just like it's a Volkswagen.
It's a Hillman Minx.
Right.
The whole backstory of it was that it was, what if Batman and Robin broke up, essentially. But it was played out like a romantic, semi-romantic thing. But also part of it was because Batman was just... It was kind of all over. He wasn't getting any work.
And yeah.
Things were picking up for Robin. And, so it kind of escalates. It escalates in the end, and the Batmobile gets repossessed, and he ends up driving a Hillman Minx and his cape was sticking out the door.
Yes.
And his bat phone gets disconnected, so he's trying to ring Commissioner Gordon from a phone booth. And he ends up working at Bunnings. But he's got no... People kind of wandering around. He's just trying to help people find things, but he's got no idea. He's got a nail belt on, so his utility belt.
And we're not talking the Christian Bale bat suit, are we?
Where is she?
No, which was how... This is kind of an interesting facet of that. This, when I wrote the sketch, because originally it was just one sketch, and then we had so much fun on the day that we started riffing with ideas and wrote up more. But the original one was literally an Australian barbecue. Looked like an old barbecue until we panned across, and there's just me dressed as Batman, but the Adam West Batman, costume shop one, where the cowl and cape are all one piece.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it just physically made me look really unfit and unwell. And like the cowl was kind of on an angle, so one of my eyes was out and one wasn't. And the utility belt was just a little bit of yellow lycra.
Yep.
And I'm there just drinking a beer, and people go, how's things going, Batman? Yeah, and I think things are a bit quiet at the moment, actually, yeah. You know, just spend some time down the coast. You going to take the board? Yeah, maybe, yeah. And
take the
and then someone goes, so, how's things with Robin? Yeah, look, It's okay. I just prefer not to talk about it. And then Robin turns up with Peter Hallier dressed as Captain Terrific.
Right. At the party. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
then we end up, I lose it. And I'm in the bathroom with Corinne Grant kind of patting my cow. And I'd get really drunk and start abusing him at the party and try and punch him, but my arm keeps getting caught in the cowl.
I've got a question. I've got a question for you, Damien, about just sketch comedy in Australia. Because for me, it's really fascinating that there was this. It seems like, and I might be wrong, but it seems like there was. I mean, there was a time, 80s, maybe early 90s, where sketch was king on Aussie TV, and it was just everywhere. And you had those real stalwarts like Comedy Company and Fast Forward and stuff like that, and it just ruled. And even the fringe stuff, what DGen were doing, and it was all sketch. Driven, and I don't know what I'm assuming. There's certain things that were happening at the time that bolstered that and kept it up.
Yeah,
and then we moved into a period where it dropped away a little bit, and Skid House in a way was one of the.
Then it came back for a while. Yes. In the early 90s, it came back, and all the networks that in those days and the networks still largely operate like this. What tends to happen because our commercial television world is so small is that they hear someone's doing something and then they've got to have one as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I can't remember what the order was. I think Skid House was the first one announced, but Eaton Comedy Inc. appeared on TV about the same time. And then The Big Bite came out.
Yep.
Yeah. And was there one called The Wedge?
The Wedge came later. Yeah. Yep.
Was that Chris Lilley? Was Chris Lilley in one of those?
Chris Lilley was in Big Bite. Yeah.
Okay.
To where his Mr. G character was first seen. Anyway, it was kind of interesting because. It was doing reasonably well, and Skid House was doing. Our third season, we were getting over 1 million viewers, and everything was fine. Wow. And we got offered a fourth season, but Roving Enterprises decided not to do it because sketch comedy is really expensive to make.
Yep,
it's preventative because of the amount of location change and like continuity's different. It's not like Neighbours where you can roll out the same sets. Anyway, they decided to do a live sketch show, which I was part of, and it wasn't going to be called Skid House Live. It was going to be called something else. But it was about half of Skid House, but with a few other randoms in. And it had a Saturday Night Live feel. There would be a guest comic in it. You know, we did a pilot. Husey was the guest comic. But it was really undercooked. And they shot it like the old Big Gig on ABC with the audience standing up with five stages. And so people kind of had to turn around. And it's incredible, particularly with comedy, how important it is for audience to be comfortable.
Yes.
And they were literally they were confused and scared because booms and microphones and cameras were coming over the top of them. And we were watching this going, look at them. They're not even looking at us yet. And we started to
get terrified. Oh, no.
And then sketch after sketch was just like, it was literally like, it was like the beaches of Gona and Papua New Guinea in 43. We were just getting sent out over the top. And, sketches were just dying, because the audience were going, oh, what? Oh, where do we have to go now? Anyway, then by chance, the day the thing was finished editing and mastered, there was a fire and the building got burnt down and the master was in there. It hadn't been delivered. It was supposed to have been delivered that day and it hadn't been.
Wow.
And it got water damaged and it took 3 months to restore it. And in that time, Channel 7 put on a show called Let Loose Live, which was very similar. They just went, they got pulled after two, and Channel 10 didn't want to touch live sketch comedy.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
And so, all that work just kind of disappeared. And ever since, the networks have been really scared about sketch. And now I think online sketch comedy is kind of replacing it.
Yeah.
And it may have a renaissance because of that, but I don't know what the future is. For that, I think people are happy to watch 5-10 minute bits and
it's just funny, like given the longevity of Saturday Night Live in America, and they draw all their talent from stand up comedy, they don't really take people from sort of sketch or improv backgrounds and stuff so much, like they go after stand ups, I think.
Yeah.
And we've got so many funny people in Australia. You would think that something like that would have.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a bit of in America you can handpick all the stand-ups who can act or who can do character and voice and all that sort of stuff. There's fewer of those in Australia. They certainly are there. But I think you're right. Often they'll pick the wrong people. And you get this weird mix too. Skid House was a pretty good balance of it, but you end up in environments where... And Comedy Inc., which was happening at the same time, had a room of writers in Sydney and actors in Melbourne.
Right.
And then they're did not meet.
No.
Yeah.
And some of them, like people like Paul McCarthy and that, could write and would write their own characters. And whereas with Skid House, we're all in the one room. We had a couple of separate writers, but we all wrote as well. And,
well, that's the synergy you need, isn't it?
Yeah.
Were you going to say something about
that? No. That's
But yeah, so I'm not sure where it is in the TV world. There are around, like Troy Kinney just did a show on Seven Mate, which was essentially kind of sketch based. And that was come from he'd done a lot of online
and the ABC
stuff.
The ABC have continuously they're dropping things in and
they're doing a thing called First Blood at the moment, which is allowing sketch groups to come up. There's a group in Melbourne at the moment called Fancy Boy.
Yeah, I saw the Fresh Blood.
Their Fresh Blood was brilliant, but they're a lot of them are Brisbane, and they're a really good example of guys who've come to comedy who are kind of meta and a bit outside it.
Mm.
And they did this amazing show which won the Golden Gibbo Award at the festival. And I think it might, can't remember if it got a Barry nomination, but it was like, there's always a show in a festival that just takes off, and this became a cult thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were putting on extra shows. I went on their very last night, and there were 100 people just standing at the back of the room. They just let them in, mainly festival pass holders. And many of these people had been multiple times and were yelling out the catchphrases.
Oh, wow.
And the show itself was like, it was like a kind of somewhere between a stand-up night and vaudeville, and then this really dark place. Yeah. And there were famous guests coming on, like Tom Ballard came out and did a Christian stand-up with Tourette, which was really funny. Other people, like another guy, a guy called Luke Heggie, he's a Sydney comic, he's brilliant, he's really dry, and really like him. And he just did this character, he's well-known in Melbourne, he's called Coinsy, he's just a beggar in Melbourne. But he's a bit of an arsehole. Like, he just, you go, like, give us $2, mate. And as soon as you go, no, you're a fucking arsehole. You fucking, he kind of walks off. And he did. And you would have sworn it was him. He never looked at the audience once. And it was amazing. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And one of the other guys does this routine of a stand up who just rests with the audience. He goes, what do you do for a living, mate? Oh, yeah, you're a carpenter. Oh, carpenters. Carpenters. So when you like doing your accounts and stuff, what do you work on? Oh, you work on a computer. Oh, I bet you're watching porn all night on your computer. Yeah, you filthy ass. And then you go, what do you do, mate? Yeah, I'm a kindergarten teacher. Right, yeah. What do you do, mate? But everything was always about you get it back to porn.
Yeah.
And the audience were just, it was really strange thing to watch. Some of it, you know, like, because I've been around for a while, and not to say, oh, I've done that, but every generation thinks they're kind of reinventing it, but they're doing it so well, that it's fine, you know.
And this is the thing with the population of Australia, because it's very, very different to the number of audience members in America. I think that's a big, big thing. But in Australia, the audience wants to see hit after hit after hit. So if any of these shows have hit and miss feels about them, they lose a bit of faith, and that's it. They just tune out. And because of the pool of talent as well, with the number of writers and things that they've got over in America, so got, and testing before they go out, you don't have that opportunity here in Australia. You've got like limited.
Yeah, that's right. I was talking to a comedy. I went to a 50th birthday that was almost entirely populated by comedy writers.
that would have been either awesome or really depressing.
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. And some of them are really good mates, but one of them was saying, and he's. This guy, he used to do stand-up. Most of them do stand-up as well, or have done stand-up. Anyway, he was saying he was at this writers' conference with this American. I can't remember who the guy was. And the guy's sort of getting people to talk about their work experience and, you know, he could give advice. And he goes, so, you know, what's the name of your show he works on? And he said the show. And he goes, so, how many's on your writing team? And he went, team? He said, how many writers you got behind you? No, it's just me, mate. I think you misunderstand. I'm trying to find out like the extent of the working relationships, you know, the numbers of you. There are several team. No, mate, it's just me.
One.
We're just,
Yep.
And there's so many cases of that, you know. Just,
can't get the head around it.
Falls back to. And that's why so many things fall over, because we don't give them enough time to allow for that. You know, to allow for that writing process to kick in. And
I think Adam had a point there when he said that we're used to seeing hit after hit, because the side effect of us sort of having grown up on American TV hand-me-downs is that we only get the stuff that succeeded over there.
Exactly.
We don't sort of get so much of the stuff that may have only gone two or five episodes or something over
the number
States.
Of pilots that just never see the light of day.
Exactly, and, yeah.
Yeah.
So we only kind of get what, or have been getting what Australian television executives think is worth buying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're kind of spoiled a little bit, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, we are, and we end, so we end up then falling back on the same teams that deliver, like the Working Dog people, and
And that's not to say there's anything wrong with their product.
No, absolutely not. But they know, like, they know they're going to get the quality and the routine too. You know,
And of course, it has the same effect in the film industry as well, because you're saturated with the American and even the English market, and you have one film made in Australia that's poor or is poorly received, and it loses faith in that Aussie flavour in the cinemas as well.
Yeah,
and that's been happening decade after decade.
Yeah, there's still a huge amount of cringe factor, like cultural cringe in Australia, and like through the 90s and the noughties, like they were saying that, you know, we've grown past that. We're maturing as a nation and stuff like that. But you look at our the level of support for Australian product in the cinemas and on TV and stuff like that, and it's nowhere near the same. Like, we're kind of embarrassed of Australian films.
Yeah.
Like, you talk to anybody in the street and they'll say, no, I don't watch Aussie movies. They're either seen as sort of depressing or a bit too sort of fringe, you know, that it's about bloody, I don't know, like a mute albino cannery worker.
And you guys would have heard it with people saying Backyard Ashes. Like, oh, I'm surprised. Yeah, I don't really like
Australian films. I don't like Aussie movies. Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, finally a good Australian film.
And yeah.
How many do you go to? How do they... Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Australian films tend to not deliver on is a universal location. Like, it could be shot anywhere. I think that... Because we do tend to do outback a lot, or very quintessentially character-driven.
You've kind of got to play that.
As far as international marketing and stuff, but you've got a film has a role to tell our stories too. And our stories, even if it's set here, can still be universal. It's only America's inability to be able to look at something and just go, I think people should just enjoy that for what it is.
Yeah, no, they definitely can't.
Like, Please Like Me, Josh Thomas's brilliant show. Which,
and they love it in the States.
They bought it and they looked at it for ages and they worked out that they couldn't. It was one of the few times where producers went, we can't make that. That is kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
Rather than getting all the pieces together and going, episodes, the TV show kind of is exactly that. Mm. You know. So I don't think we should be apologetic about making Australian stories that are clearly outback.
It's kind of, you got to play to your strengths too. Like, it's only because of the kind of population difference and the fact that we don't have as many people working towards that same goal that Australian images don't have that same iconic status yet. You know, I mean, like, even for people who have never been to New York City, have a sense of New York City as a character from the amount of times they've seen it on film and in TV. Mm. You know what I mean? So it's only because it gets featured and it is almost like a character in a lot of drama that you see coming out of that part of the US is that the city is another character in the show or the film. And that happens so often that kind of becomes an iconic thing. And it's only a matter of time, I think, and sort of exposure that Australian images will have the same heft, you know?
When you say play to your strengths, I mean, I don't know why. I wasn't even born in the country, but I tend to write regional rural stories.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it could be because I tour so much. But I just have a great affection for it and the characters that inhabit it. And when I first started touring the merger, I actually got interest from Queensland to tour it. And then they started saying, would you change it to rugby league? And I went, no. It's a really weird question. It's insulting the audience to say they can't
relate.
They can't relate. And like, I've had people from, you know, Irish comics, English comics, Scottish comics, American comics, and just go, I get it. I don't know Aussie rules, but I get it's small mind in a small town, prejudice, you know, the themes are the same. And what makes it interesting and gives a point of difference is where it's set and what it's about.
Yeah.
And the minutiae, because Aussie rules culture is completely different to rugby league. Like, you might go, oh, it's sport.
Yeah.
But the cultures of those clubs and how they sit within country town living is really different.
Yeah, you did right.
Yep.
And I find Wagga in this area really fascinating because I I had Holdy around this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Far too early, to be honest. Gone. Knocked on the door about 8:30.
He tends to get up pretty early.
And he was talking about his, you know, childhood sporting days. And we were, you know, just doing that, you know, old blokes reminiscing about when they could do stuff outside.
Jamie's not going to have those
and
stories.
He played, he was telling me, he played, like, right through his junior years, he played league, soccer, and Aussie rules every weekend.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then when he became an adult, he was playing Aussie rules and union.
Yeah.
Like, just picked up union. Like, that's unheard of in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's even rare to have someone who knew what soccer, who played soccer, let alone any rugby posts.
Yeah,
like, I'm a bit more aware of them now, but this area is fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like
very diverse.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And people do follow both and understand both cultures.
Yeah.
So, kind of perfect place to film it, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And the promos and go straight into the last question.
Whatever you want, mate.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
oh, no, we could quickly run through them.
All right,
think we should.
I think we need to promote
absolutely
what's going on in the theatre scene.
Well, yeah, considering Damien's here,
yeah,
you know.
I was talking enough about my concert. Let's talk about the others.
But there is some really good
your
stuff
concert,
happening.
Yeah. The merger at the Wagga Civic Theatre this Friday night. Tickets still available. Phone 692-6968.
At 7:30 or when it gets dark.
Yeah, when it gets dark.
Or go to www.civictheatre.com.au.
Yeah.
I've done that plug a fair few times before, the Civic Theatre phone number and stuff.
You're on you're on the banner of the
I'm on the website, yeah.
On the website, yeah.
He pops
yeah.
up occasionally. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It's an old photo, though. I mean,
You haven't changed.
Well, I've got a bit less hair and a bit more guts.
Hmm.
I got an extra chin from when they took that photo.
Oh, okay.
What else is happening, Matt?
Your Civic Theatre, as always, is very busy. There's next week... Next Wednesday evening is the screening sort of celebration of or finale of this year's Wagga Wagga Fest, which is the Wagga's short film festival that happens every year now.
Yeah, and that's going to feature the film that Joe Williams is in.
That's correct.
Joe
yeah.
Williams,
that's
of course,
right,
the boxing
about
and football legend who was in a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so I think there's about 23 films that have been sort of shortlisted for it, and they'll all be screened on that evening, and it's that should be a lot of fun. And they'll, you know, they'll hand out some prizes and so on the night. Yeah, so that's 7 p.m. on the 15th, which is next Wednesday, at the Civic Theatre.
And then we're actually out at the uni at the moment. That's where we record the 5 o'clock wave. And the University Theatre Ensemble are doing the play Alice in Wonderland from the 20th of October. So support those guys. Which year is it? Do you know?
That
is 2014.
Oh, it is too. I have these things where I
that's
come in
second
and out.
Year. Yeah. That's our second year group doing
second
that.
Second year group?
I think.
So
I'm pretty sure.
Is it second year is the first year that they perform?
Exactly.
Is that
yeah.
right? Is that still the way
that's
it goes?
Right. Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
So support the young actors out here.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You're right.
And who else are we giving a plug for?
Coxie. Yeah. Coxie's got something coming up. He's putting on Michael Gow's play Away from the 1st to the 8th of November. Coxie, of course, one of the writers and producers of Backyard Ashes that we were all involved with.
And starring Stephen Holt.
Starring Holty.
Yeah, Holty, who's been mentioned tonight as well. Yeah. So,
oh, great.
Well, who else could we mention?
We've got...
Did you say anything about Wasim?
Not yet.
No?
There you go. He's in.
There you go.
Yeah, legend. Wasim Khan.
Done.
Khanfactor.com. He's his blog. Very political. And, of course, we have to talk about your mate, Damo. Lawrence Mooney is currently on ABC2 doing Dirty Laundry Live. He'll be here on the 14th of November with his stand-up show, Stupid Liar. Lawrence Mooney, Stupid Liar.
And anyone who's not seen Lawrence Mooney's stand-up is
he's very
missing,
funny.
He's missing out. He's quite...
He was in. He went to the US for that last Comic Standing, didn't he?
He did.
Was...
Yeah, it was he. He and Fiona Loughlin.
Yeah,
and you know what? I think it might have even been my manager, who no longer does stand up. Anthony Manchetti might have been the third one.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
yeah. There you go.
Well,
he was involved with that show. Oh man, what was that?
Agony.
No, I did like the Agony, that's Adam Zwaar's thing. No, it was Sam Simmons' show last year. It was like really weird, suburban.
Problems?
Problems, that's it.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
Super funny.
And again, something a little bit different because we've got our special guest in, Damien. I've got a little clip, it only goes for 8 seconds, from an Australian television show to see how we're keeping the flavour throughout.
All together now.
All together now. Oh, that's it. That was your answer. That was your
memory.
Okay, you'll have to listen very closely. And I want you to close your eyes because I'm going to turn my recorder around. It's actually got what it's from written on it. And I don't,
okay, so is, we look, is dialogue? Or?
If so, yeah, like if somebody says the words, it's the Australian fast bowler.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably are you good. Ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all you get. That's all you get. But there's enough clues in there to be able to work out what this is from. I'm going to play it one more time.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't understand the words.
Why do you think you just run off on your own? Because I'm carrying a gun. Heidi.
Oh, I don't... Heidi. When what I watch this clip... Heidi. When I watch this clip, you can't really understand the words either.
Yeah.
What is that last word? Is it Heidi? Did she say Heidi?
But the... I don't know what she says. It's really hard to know.
I'm carrying a gun.
But that's the thing. She is saying that she's carrying a gun. That's one of the clues.
Blue heelers?
No.
That's your guess.
Should we,
you've gone with blue heelers?
Mm. Okay. Carrying a gun is the is a clue. Clue into the title? Or?
Yes. And also the way that they're speaking is a fairly big clue as well.
I'm going to say prisoner.
Okay.
It's probably wrong. I did say prisoner before, but...
You're right, it is wrong. Which leaves...
I'm not going to say prisoner.
Oh, I thought what it might be.
Skippy.
Why do you think you could just run off on your own? Because I'm carrying a gun. Finally.
Homicide.
Can I change my answer?
Yep, go for it.
Cop shop.
No. Shit. I'm going to give you the answer.
Barjars.
Matlock Police.
I'm going to give you the answer now.
Division 4.
Are you ready?
Yeah, Division 4.
And that's all we've got time Louis. For the 5 o'clock wave. It's Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries.
Oh.
Series
a
one.
New, a kind of a new show.
Upper-clipped English kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah,
we were totally...
Without the vision, it looked... It just sounded...
We were totally really on the
sort of... initial like theory sort of Grundy
80s
was the box.
Grundy's yeah. kind of drama.
Yeah. That's what 96. We were.
So what I'll do is I'll put the clip up on our Facebook and Twitter and people can watch it.
And they can test themselves.
They can test themselves, then.
I had a friend who was in Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries.
Who was that?
Her name's Annie Stanford. She was a race car driver who had a crash.
Wow.
And it was suspicious circumstances.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Isn't that a period piece? Like a
She was racing
a race car.
Model T, like one
like
of those
a, like a Fred Flintstone kind of...
one of the ones out of Gatsby or something.
Yeah, it was like a Gatsby type thing. It was a big old sort of... Supposed to look like a
jalopy.
And Damien, whilst I was doing research on you and copy and pasting from you...
Yeah.
I noticed that you've got there. I don't know whether you've been on or not yet, but it says that you're on the ABC show, which I love, and John Wood was on it too.
Yeah,
the dating one.
It's a date. Yeah, the new series very starts funny. On the 16th of October. I think.
Oh,
it's
so,
new
it has, one. So you haven't sweet. Been on it yet? It's
no, it's filmed. To be... Yeah, I had the pleasure of doing an episode with Rhys Darby.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's
that's
funny.
Cool.
Which was great. Rhys Darby, Susie Porter, and Heidi
Klum.
I always forget her name. She's
just
she's
Heidi.
One who plays, does Audrey's Kitchen,
With
the working dog kind of faux cooking show, God. And also the girl in the wheelchair from The Librarians. She's best known it.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember her. She's funny. She's really funny. And
I've got
she's
IMDb.
A delightful person. So hey, we play.
This is where our producer
without giving too much away.
Jump
Heidi
in.
And I play husband and wife hosts of a swingers party.
Mm. A lot of research?
Well, they did a lot of research. and half the extras were real swingers.
Bullshit.
Nice.
Really.
And no one told us who was which, but we all, after about 20 minutes,
worked out.
We all worked out who was real and who wasn't. And we did
the
it.
The ones
it was
where
amazing
the kid came off.
Mansion, this like 70s mansion in Templestowe where this old Greek guy who used to work in the building industry used to strip buildings before they were demolished.
Yeah.
So he actually had like, you know, the bar from the Southern Cross Hotel and
bloody hell.
These amazing kind of pieces of art. And, yeah. So it was pretty surreal. Good fun though.
Typical. IMDb's only got the first episode, which has got Lisa McCune in it. And then all the others are just those.
That was a good one though.
2.1.
Sure. When we were called episode one. Oh, we were called it. Oh, actually, yeah, because every episode has two stories, but no, it wasn't. Sam Simmons is in the other story on this that episode.
Yeah, so the first one, you're right, 16th of October, it's being aired. Do setup dates work? Is that yours?
No.
And the rest of the episode number 2.2 and et cetera,
yeah.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for.
We do
tonight.
Have one bit of correspondence here. Awesome. We have a tweet from previous guest of the show and continuing friend of the show, Paddo. Michael Patterson, of course.
What's
he said, tweeting from the future, .. The show was awesome tonight.
Oh, good on him.
Well done.
That's
he's
nice.
He's got the DeLorean phone.
And keeping true to the promise from last week, We've been...
What was that?
Someone free zone tonight. What? He has not been mentioned once. One of our other regular correspondents.
Oh, yes. Oh, we kept him out of it.
I'm not going to say his name.
We kept him out of it.
He's been out of it tonight. Yep. And I noticed he hasn't been active on social media all week too. No, so he got offended last
night. He has totally snubbed. It's gone. I mean, well, he'll be back with a vengeance next week.
So a special thanks to our guest, Damien Callan. Thanks for coming in, mate.
Hope you come back someday.
On you, Sonia.
Yeah.
Maybe I will.
Cool.
I don't make any firm commitments or
anything. Yeah. No, need.
Next week?
What? Yeah.
We'll pick you up.
Yeah,
we'll pick you up.
Yeah. Will we, though?
I like...
depends.
I like to turn half-ass offers into kind of needy commitments immediately. That's kind of,
oh, really? We'll do another one tomorrow.
Oh, we must do this again sometime. We'll just put it in our diary. Why don't you? Okay,
why don't we just do another one now?
Yeah,
just hit stop and then record again.
And we're looking forward to seeing your show on Friday night, The Merger, at 7:30 at the Civic Theatre. You can still get your tickets now.
Yes, that's Friday, October the 10th, of course. If you're listening to this podcast after that, then you've missed it.
You've missed it.
Yeah, and Matt uploads it after.
And it is, which you never do. I was in there today, and it is selling... It's because we're in the foyer, it's not a heap of seats, and it's selling quite well. So,
okay.
I wouldn't recommend relying on getting a ticket at the door.
Okay, which is Wagga audiences are notorious.
But I think some people will, but I think at the moment half the audience are going to try and walk up,
and rather than
not
turn
half
you
the
away,
seats left.
Rather than turn you away, if you do try and get a ticket at the door and you find that it is sold out, I'm happy to do a one-man show at the Wurundjeri Amphitheatre, which is just behind the doors of
good
the
idea.
City Theatre.
We can just siphon the people out.
We'll call that...
Happy
the,
to do it. That'll mean that I'll miss your show, but at least they get something.
All right. Well, my present is a DVD of...
Oh, really?
...of The Merger.
Because
so.
Remember he came in and he said, I've got a present for you guys.
Yeah.
And then he went to bring it out and he said, no, I'll give it to you on air.
And you went, that's a good idea. Yeah,
there it is.
So I'll give it.
We'll pull it out.
All right,
we'll pull it.
Pull it out. And speaking of pulling it out, and we were talking about Batman earlier, I went and saw that Gone Girl.
Look at that!
Oh, you got one each.
Wow, look at that! I'm gonna
look at the guns on you in that cover photo as well.
Yeah, whose body is that?
Two tickets.
This is going in the good room.
It's taken by my good Greg Adonis photographer mate, James Benlides. He knows how to get you.
Did he do the photos of your wedding? Because those were fantastic.
No, he didn't.
Oh, a bit awkward.
He's done virtually all my performance shots, though.
Yeah. And you got your
we
wife
did think about getting
well.
Him, but we got cool people.
Your lovely wife's got a credit on the back, I've noticed as well.
Well, she's done all the work.
She's done all the work. She's a stage manager, for God's sake.
She stage managed that night.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, just to clarify.
No, she did. She did. Well, I got her in because the guy who was doing it for that season wasn't it.
Okay.
He was right. I think he had a wedding. He had a wedding.
He won't be listening. But I was just going to say, I was trying to tie this in with our Batman conversation earlier, but I saw, has anyone else seen Gone Girl, the David Fincher film? With
no,
Ben Affleck?
I want to. Apparently it's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good for the first...
No spoilers.
No, I'm not going to give you a spoiler, but it's very good for the first half, and then it gets weird.
Did
but anyway...
Did you go to Gone Girl for your wedding anniversary?
Yeah, we did.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's grim.
Interesting choice.
Very interesting choice.
Murder and...
Of your
spouse.
Yeah.
Rape.
But it has got... And keep an eye... And this is... You haven't seen it yet, so keep an eye out for this. Ben Affleck does full frontal nudity. If you blink, you miss it, and I missed it. So...
Oh, there's some Affleck in there, is there?
Yeah, so I googled it, looked it up anyway, because I don't like missing out.
Sydney jersey. He just lifts it up.
Just starts a little wobble. Right.
Just in the background.
Yeah. Just starts a little wobble.
I love that Matt was doing the
wobble.
Yeah. We're both doing the dance.
We're doing it. Imagine. Just use your imagination. We're all just doing the wobble.
Yeah, the poor 9-year-old kid that was next to him still scarred. But I googled it because I don't like missing out on seeing Ben Affleck's junk, and found it. And I can tell you now, they're going to have to make a cod piece just for him for Batman. That's all I can say.
Big lad?
Yep.
What are we talking, like Michael Fassbender?
Enough
big?
To give me envy.
Have you seen Shame?
No, Michael I haven't Fassbender? Seen it, but I've heard about it. I've heard a description of that.
He's packing.
Yeah, and at the Academy Awards, George Clooney made some comment about him being able to play golf without a club.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. So, thanks for coming, Damien.
I'm ready to finish on a little bit of cock talk.
Yeah. Always like to finish on penis envy talk.
There we go.
Good night, guys. Click clack, front and back.
Hey, my sister tells me that her son, he's only about 2 or 3.
Yep.
Now they've been listening to the podcast in the car, and now he says click clack front and back.
Oh, I love it. Wish I could claim it as my own, but that's been going for
it is
2 or 3
he doesn't
decades.
Want to imitate his Uncle Jamie and say be cool to one another.
Yeah. But it's been out of fashion for a while.
It
so
has
it's a good thing. It's
back.
Bringing it back in.
Yep,
a bit
it
of
back.
Community service. It's great.
Yep. So click clack
from
front
the
back.
5 o'clock wave. the world via Wagga Wagga. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at 5OClockWave, or you can follow me, my personal Twitter handle, at the Jamie Way, THEJAMEWAY.
Damien, you've got your social media handles.
Oh, there's plenty of ways to find me. Just wander Tinder. Around. Start on my website. Leads are everywhere.
Yeah.
But just Damien Callan and on. I changed. I did. Yeah, Damien Callan comedian on Facebook is probably the best place to go.
Nice one.
Support.
I'm apparently on Twitter, but yeah, don't bother looking me up because I never write on it.
It never gets back to
what's
me.
What's the point?
It's taking the social
and,
out
and
of social
Adam
media.
Drummond at Adam Drummond
got the first one. Didn't have to put 001 or whatever afterwards. Mm. Good night, everyone.
See you later, guys. Cool.
Awesome hangs, kids.
Boy.